To Marco Dravitz, who is, well, where do you start? At 21, associate principal cellist of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. At 21, associate principal cellist of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Later, a member of the American String Quartet and a faculty member at Manhattan School of Music, and now an entrepreneur. My mentor and friend Mark Plague speaks about back when we were in school together, it was 6 careers, and he tells me now that there are 8. So, and I'm trying to master one of them and keep adding to them. But this idea that we are all performers, we are all teachers, we are all scholars, we are all composers, distributors, administrators, all of these things comprise a life in the arts. And so it's terrific to have somebody who exemplifies that and at every level seems to be able to excel at the highest levels. So we thought we'd bring Mario here to help wrap things up and summarize a lot of the themes that we were talking about these last 2 days. And hopefully so she can tell us her remarkable story. So please welcome Mario Dravitz.
Just if you ever wanted to look at somebody who is incredible at generating income and creating new business models. She is certainly a stellar example. So anyway, so that's sort of what the goal is today. I know everyone has, I heard some talks yesterday touching on this, but excuse my non-fabulous graphic, because I'm not a graphic designer. So excuse my but I think it's important to just to sum up everything here, sort of what did the 20th century system look like? So you know, first you know, if you're fortunate, you got a manager, or you know, win a job, and you're not really thinking about how the money can be in front of business. I was not really thoughtful about that until when I joined the American Student Quartet or Pittsburgh Symphony, and then I started seeing, oh wow, 20% of my check goes to pay our managers. Like, what are the managers doing? And then you're supposed to send, you know, $3,000 a month to a PR person, and you're not sure where the ROI is on all these things. So got me thinking a little bit. But anyway, in the perfect world, you know, managers are looking for jobs, and you've got the arts organizations that are potentially promoting you. And, you know, in theory, then, our responsibility as artists to go out and perform. And there's sort of this one-way street, right? And then the audience would listen, they would see printed programs, sponsored printed program material. Fortunately, we hope that if in a good team scenario, we get a great review, and you'd sell the physical CDs and sign the CDs at the hall, right? So that was sort of, you know, our whole model, right? Well, that one-way street of, you know, you perform, audience receives, and leaves has sort of ended. And so what do we do about that? Well, you know, there's obviously a lot of reasons why that's changed, and technology is an enormous part of why that's changed. You know, because people want what they want, when they want it, how they want it. And they, you know, I know Peter had mentioned this, the Shirky quote thing about having, you know, that people want to be active participants. People don't want to be just passive. And so what does that mean to us, you know, for those of us who practiced most of our lives and we're not, I certainly was not, I went to conservatory around 14, 15, and that was really not something I thought about. This is something that I was interested in, what my responsibility was to connect with fans or empower them to be an active participant in the experience of a concert or experience in my career or whatever. So these are just kind of, you know, I think it's really powerful to think about how in the past, you know, we used to have these communities that were circumscribed by geography. You know, largely, you know, whether or not you got along with everyone in your community, by default, you had close proximity to each other, you were around each other. And now that's really not a unifier necessarily. Now you can have your community, you can have this dispersed sense of community, global community, that, you know, from around the world that can be engaging in a very, you know, localized event, because they have something that is bringing them together in this common experience. So I think it's important to think about this accelerated shift whereby it's a community reformation of geography. And so what does that mean to us in our arts community as a whole? And I actually think that it actually presents problems and amazing opportunities to sort of re-centralize sort of community, but also gives this incredible opportunity for democratization of access to content that we've never had. And so, yeah, there's this incredible opportunity for collaboration between different communities and new markets in ways that hasn't previously been able to happen. So this is just kind of an equation that I've been playing a lot with in my mind as for summing up things about, you know, technology and culture equaling innovation and community. And I think about it in terms of, you know, culture. You have thousands of years of culture that has now, for the first time, has the opportunity to be disseminated through the power of technology to create sort of new communities and new global communities, new local communities, whatever it is. And it actually is enabling a lot of innovation, whether it's artistic innovation, whether it's technological innovations for disseminating information, whatever it is. There's a lot of new, while some models are dead, in my opinion, you know, there's new things that are constantly emerging, which I think are incredible. And I think, you know, your generation for the Arts Enterprise contingent here really has an incredible blank slate and opportunity to dream big and think about new models that you can try at a local level, at a regional level, at a state level, a national level, global level. So I think it's really exciting. I just wanted to throw this little quote in that Peter had given to me in an email. But I think it's important to obviously step back and think. To be honest, I'm so involved in the tech space at this moment that I sometimes forget to step back at the 30,000 foot level and think about what we're talking about, which is, you know, the arts as a whole. And, you know, how do we communicate the power of, and Peter's words about, you know, if you learn to listen to a company, to support, to emphasize, work together as an ensemble, and do so non-verbally, you know, how does that soft power initiative, if you will, how do we translate that, and how can we use technology and some of this innovation to bring those things to the world as a whole? So this is kind of my approach to thinking about sort of, instead of that one-way street model, that, you know, ideally now, so when you're thinking of when you're starting your own organization or your own initiative or whatever it is, if you think about sort of, you want to ideally be connecting with an audience or with your, whatever that means, whether it's online or it's offline, whatever, connecting with them, and then you want to be finding ways to motivate them to become your Uber fans, ideally. These are the people that you want to have go out and be proselytizing on your behalf at no cost to you. You know, I think it's always good to think about still the Obama campaign in terms of the fact that it was going through constituents instead of to constituents, and that he was able to mobilize and, you know, go from like zero brand recognition to be a killer in that particular, with no money, or essentially very little money. I think that's a very good thing to remind yourself of. How do you find the Uber fans and empower them to go through them to be recruiting other individuals, recruiting them. And then if you talk about, you want to make it possible to encourage them and to facilitate those Uber fans, in a sense, to go out and share with their friends and community what they love, the experience that they had, that they love from seeing you or being part of an organization or whatever. I think that's one of the big challenges that I see a lot in my daily work at the moment, because if, you know, it's kind of the horse and the cart issue where, you know, an organization, a union or musicians or whatever, don't want to give the organization anything to go out to be able to try to connect with the fans or empower them and find new ambassador, makes it very difficult for them to even start the process. And oftentimes the musicians are like, well, you know, we don't trust management, so we don't want to give them anything to go out and try it, because we know that we're going to see the ROI. So you have to kind of get past that a lot, which unfortunately is happening. But I think it's very important that if somebody connects with you and they want to go out and share something, that they have a way to engage and facilitate with ease sharing that with their friends and their community. And then ideally, you want to be able to recognize them and then again connect with them and pounce on this opportunity again. And we'll kind of go through some like tangible, real-world examples that are working with this kind of thought process. But anyways, it's just something I kind of keep playing around with. So I just wanted to touch, because my company Cars, 150 mobile apps for doing first live video streaming, and mobile apps and web, Children's Society, Lincoln Center is doing a bunch. We're launching an app this week with Sydney Symphony that will have 10 live video streaming events in mobile and web that is sponsored by the telecom company, and who actually paid us to build them a custom app, which is really exciting. But a lot of times people still are sort of, I cannot tell you how many meetings I have with senior executive directors who say, you know, we're not sure where mobile's going. We're going to wait a couple of years and then think about our strategy. So, which is sort of like, it's first shadowing to me. So I just wanted to put, I know a lot of all of you guys are way ahead of this group, but I just wanted to share that, you know, this date keeps moving, whether it's going to be sooner or later, but that by 2013, people will be using mobile devices to access information more than a fixed internet connection. If you are not thinking about that, I think that's a problem. So I just want to share that if you go into whatever organizations or activities you're doing. And yeah, every second, 3 smartphones are activated. And I was at the same executive director who said to me recently they were not sure where mobile was going. Their site and their toolbar for their site is actually in Flash. So for many of you people, I'm sure you're quite familiar with the fact that that's a really challenging thing. If you have a website that's in toolbars in the class, and if you want to wait a couple of years to think about what that browsing experience is like on your phone, you know, if you want to be looking at mobile web apps and having great user or quick experience, find what you want, get event listings, get information, get tickets, whatever. So I think it's really important. I'm rather passionate about it. This was a study that came out in early summer of 2010. McKinsey had done a report for the World Economic Forum Media Committee, which I'm a part of, and this was in the Wall Street Journal. There's a great article that recaps all of this stuff in the Wall Street Journal around that time as well. But I think this is also an important thing to be thinking about, that the average number of text messages that are told 19 sends is 100 per day, and that, you know, we all know the trends about that they're linking their email accounts for sending their school-related material and using Facebook at this point, and it'll be something else. Before too long, Facebook is losing the teen demographic monopoly. I think it's important to think about that in context. So I just wanted to explain a little bit about what my company does in terms of what my background is, or what sort of we've been making up for the last almost 3 years now. So Instant Encore is essentially a digital asset management system, which means that we are able to work. We work with about 3,000 in our organization, ranging from Carnegie Hall to Cleveland Institute of Music to UMKC to American Public Media to New York Philharmonic, London Philharmonic, the Opera House, YouTube, whatever. We basically are able to aggregate and distribute content. So whether it's event listings, and whether it's music for streaming or download, or publicly or privately, whether it's video for on-demand or public or private, and buzz, meaning news blogs or podcasts, the content is able to come into our system, and then we provide platforms to connect organizations and artists with our fans. So it's either mobile apps, so Android, iPhone, iPod, iTouch, or mobile web apps, your own website, either like artist websites, or our web builder, or our more sophisticated API application programming interface, which allows people to take and completely customize themselves in their own websites, send email alerts to fans, and then also be automatically posting status updates to an organization's Facebook or Twitter through our system. So basically, things can come in one time and go out in real time to whatever platforms they're using in tandem with us. So that's kind of what we do. At the high level, this is just an example. So let's say that so the control panel is our back end. Every partner of ours has a control panel up top. And let's say, just as an example, that Curtis added a video to their YouTube channel. Well, that's tagged in our system, and then as a result, that when they added the new video, it immediately sends a status update to the relevant to their Facebook page or whatever, saying new videos online. It sends a status update to their Twitter saying new videos online with a click. It sends out an email alert to any of their fans in our community that saying new video is here to watch if it's fans opted in. It's immediately on their mobile apps. It's a new featured video. It's the top of the video page for them, and it's in their website. And that just happens automatically when somebody adds something to YouTube. So it's just a way for things to go viral and publish in real time without somebody needing to go to every platform. So it's kind of one specific example. One of the things that is obviously very, very powerful and important for any tool you're using at the moment, but that I wanted to share sort of is auto-tagging, which are two ways content comes into our system. We've gone through and have standardized every recording ever made. That's actually how we started, was taking every possible music recording and actually standardized it into all these fields. So artist, conductor, ensemble, presenter, composer, arranger, blah, 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 work venue, a festival, an instrument, form, genre, and the period of time in which the piece was written. So as a result, it was really, really powerful metadata tagging system built, and we're able to go in real time then through hundreds and hundreds of RSS feeds and tag anything related to our partners or classical music. So this is an example of London Philharmonic, which we power their web stuff and their mobile apps. And this was a feed that we picked up. So that feed about the London Phil was tagged into Debussy and Dvorak and Schumann and the Yardi and the LPO, and so that happened automatically. Now, what's the value of that? Well, first of all, it's automatically in the London Phil's stuff, but if anyone's on Google searching for Debussy or for Dvorak, or if anyone's a fan of Schumann or of Yardi or whatever, they're going to also have a way to be directed to the London Phil's news or music or videos and add it, even if they're not looking for them specifically. So this is a way for people to follow the London Phil when I get the news about whatever and see it in real time on in the London Phil's platforms, but it's also a way for other people that are not specifically looking for London Phil to be directed to their content. So it's really cool in that regard, and that's the only reason that we're working with Google and YouTube a lot at the moment, just because we have the most specific information for this very niche area. So I thought that was fun. I wanted to just show a couple of things that conservatories are doing that I just think are really, really fun and small series and big series. And this is really from the thing I think I'm most proud of the fact is that one of the wonderful things about technology is that whether you have, you know, a $10 million annual budget or you have, you know, a $50,000 annual budget or, you know, a $1,000 annual budget, you can use a lot of these tools in an incredibly powerful way that doesn't require money, which I think is just your mind. So I think that's a fabulous thing. This is a fun thing that CIM does. This took a while, but now there's a whole system of artistic approval that's set up that their faculty, students, everybody, it's like 2 weeks, I believe, after every concert, everyone has decided whether or not they allow something for the audience to take the concert home, which means, and that's actually my whole idea and how I ended up starting with Instant Encore in the first place. I got so sick of always like going to a concert and you'd be like, you know, people afterwards would be like, I'd love to buy that recording of the concert I just heard, and of course you're trying to sell something that's like unrelated to the contents that they just heard. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you could like go and ask for a donation, a $20 donation, instead of just buying the CD and it's a donation to the organization, and somebody could just go home and download the content that they just heard and become your fan and reprogram that. So this is an example. These are cards that 5,000 of them cost $156 including shipping. We don't do it through this whole process. But they're like the size of business cards or credit cards. And this is allowing the fans of CIM, the alums, parents, students, whoever, donors, to be able to go home, enter a code, and download whatever content that CIM has arranged from the live event they were at. Or CIM does a code per semester, so they actually just make a very large amount available to people. Other people do it in other ways. They also then, in turn, turn it on for streaming to people who are not there, and they put that on their website, so automatically in the mobile app for streaming and so forth and so on. So the only people who would see that is available for download in this case are the people that have the code. Curtis at the Orchestra does exactly the same thing. This is an example from their October orchestra concert. They have it written into the artist's contracts, conductor's contracts, everything, that it's 24-hour turnaround time with artist approval, but they have to agree to at least allow the audience to take home most of the concert. And it's actually been amazing. I mean, at first, it was like, people were like, well, good luck, this will never ever fly. And it's actually become completely standardized into the contracts. Aspen Music Festival does it for everything. It's in public and private. So it's really been a neat process. And New York Philharmonic actually creates a card and a code for their board members each Friday. You would never see it publicly. But they get in an email, a click-through link to be able to download the concert from that weekend or the weekend before from New York Phil's case. So I think it's a really fun tool that you can package. Curtis is also doing something that UMKC is an amazing leader in as well. So Curtis has taken, and CIM is in the process, Julia's in the process, Aspen does this already, where they take our tools and they put it in their own website, and they basically have created a system where every one of their students has their own code, and that student is able to go into their website, type in their code, and then access the whatever music they performed on in student recital series, chamber music, whatever, orchestra, they're able to then download. It's just music that they were a part of. Then, and so instead of burning physical CDs, so for like Aspen, they used to burn 90 CDs for every single orchestra concert, and students would come in and buy them. And now they buy a code. So it's saved, at one conservatory, it saved about $90,000 in 2009-2010 for this system, because they're just not having to burn. It's going green, is what I call it. But so what's cool about this is that then what Curtis is in the process of doing, starting to upload their entire archival content, New York Phil is doing the same, where they use us as essentially a deposit box. So then they can allow streaming that you never see anywhere else to go on, put in their code for alumni, for donors. You can do this at different donor levels for an organization. You can do this where parents or whoever can come in and stream the performances without having to, you'd never see it anywhere else. So it's private and protected, which I think is fantastic. And the cool thing, actually, New York Phil is doing this really neat thing as well. They turn on, New York Phil basically turns on different music when it's approved or not for streaming for a limited time on mobile apps. And as Curtis, every Friday or every Tuesday, Curtis uploads something new. And they have a whole approval system now and all that. But New York Phil actually turns on historical recordings ahead of the upcoming concert date. So they had, when they were having a Stravinsky fest, they had Stravinsky conducting Stravinsky. They turned it on in our back end, one click just to online. And then it was immediately in their mobile apps and on their website and stuff, which I just think is really cool. So you don't have to put like your whole world out there, but you can use it in a targeted way that connects with the audience. And so, anyway, it's kind of cool. Just quickly, I thought I would show that these are just kind of our like basic level classic apps. But I think something that's important to think about, whether it's a website, whether it's mobile, whatever environment you're in, whether it's your Facebook, whether it's your Twitter, is not having just that one way push of content constantly. So that is not engaging. So you want to see what's new. I mean, there are so many beautiful websites that you see that are stacked, that have like, you know, haven't been updated in 6 months or a year, or works for artists in many cases. You know, and you want to have people be able to see some, what's the upcoming event, and you change the show, you know, the next event, start time after, an hour after, start of the concert. You want to see the newest videos, the newest blogs, the newest whatever. You know, get concert tickets, touch on details, take photos if you want, write comments from events, allow people to log in at that time. So, stream music, you could create a radio playlist with your own personal introductions, you could do your own little program notes before music plays, you shuffle an MP3, all these kinds of things. And so it's just really fun to see. And just as an aside, some of the live video streaming, which is starting to happen at a couple of conservatories shortly, and as I said, Chamber Society, Lincoln Center, kind of privately, a great leader in this. You know, Chamber Society has been doing this, and it's been their assistant marketing guy with a camera like we have here today that has an internet connection, and it costs them nothing to upload it using what, if you use livestream.com, you can pay a little bit if you want it to be private and not on live stream, but it's in their website, it's in their Android app, their mobile web app, and their iPhone app that we power. And I am so excited about that because I think it will evolve into many things. But they started with one of their late night at Rose Center, Rose Studio, with Schubert Quintet, David Finkel, and some wonderful young artists. And you know, you could watch it on your iPad, you watch it on anything. And those concerts were always sold out, and it was an opportunity for, you know, it was at a trial. So it was over 1,000 people were watched the concert from this very, very little intimate space, which I thought was fantastic. So very excited about that. In fact, it doesn't cost money. It's also exciting. This is just an example of like a BuzzFeed pulling in content related to any of the successes of the students at Curtis. One thing that are automatically pulled into their newsfeed, which is they're not updating. So nobody's having to manually go in and do it. You can detag things if you wish, but. Anyway, so that's the full overview of that. One of the things that we're doing with YouTube, with Curtis, with Carnegie Hall, Weill Academy, what I hope Arts Enterprise chapters would start to do, because I think it's very, very, very important to get the artists involved in feeling like they're ambassadors, is this concept of going viral through your community. So this is an example of Curtis's control panel and their whole system through our environment. And then this is what happens if you also give the tools to so that the students become their ambassadors. So Curtis actually bought Web Builders, our like website system, for all their students. And Carnegie Hall's doing that, City Conservatory is doing that, which means the Peachtree Symphony Orchestra, which I'll show in a little while. But so basically what happens is whenever Curtis adds something that's related to one of their students, this is Ben Thielman, when they would add something that includes Ben, it's immediately then updated in his website. It immediately sends and say something to his Facebook page if he's opted in that says, new music is online for me, his Facebook community, his Twitter, his mobile app, all these kinds of things, which there's a lot of ways that it can be set up control-wise, but you know, when you think about having that happen for 100 cases, so like there were 400 students or whatever it is, and you think about the power of that, you have suddenly have this whole recruited marketing group for, you know, a communications team for you, and you're making people proud. It's not just like for orchestras, you know, and musicians are like, well, why should I give the rights to, you know, the management to be using this or whatever? Well, here's a way that also they can have their orchestra schedule automatically on their website and the music that they're part of automatically on their site. And you know, it's amazing to see how much more, if they're stakeholders in the process, how excited people oftentimes become. So this is something that Ben built himself. He wanted to be a graphic designer. He customized it, he whatever repertoire, he made the header and title images as he wanted. And this is just an example. This is his own little music player that, and when Curtis added, you know, his stuff with Brahms, horn trio, and his solo, whatever, it's immediately in his website with his own music player. Curtis controls it. If they turn it offline, music wouldn't be there. We do BMI ASCAP recording, so it's quite clear. So this is, you know, this is happening automatically without him, a very professional looking system, without him needing to do anything for it. And he won Montreal and Indianapolis this year, and won Young Conservators this year as well. And he actually, as a result, he was not a big tech guy prior to this. He ended up, you know, updating the site through all the competitions, also, which was just amazing to see. I was really excited. He's a lovely guy. But anyway, so Curtis, when they added music with him for concert at Curtis, this was immediately an event listing in his website with more info, get tickets, Max Lahal, share it on Facebook. So again, this is just, it's just automatically happening. You know, no one's having redundantly enter content, which I think is great. So, and these are just the back end of how people are able to go in and create their own stuff. It's, if I can do it, I figure it's a good disclaimer for not being too, needing to be too tech savvy. You can change, you know, your styles and fonts and at any time and preview what the designs will look like. You can drag and drop the order of the toolbars and say, you know, homepage, I want to call it something else, music, radio programs, any of these things, custom pages. So it's just kind of fun. I wanted to just share this quote because I think, I know it's annoying to see quotes in I think the presentations a lot of the times, but I wanted to share this because I think it's so relevant to what Arts and Art is doing. And that, you know, the most important economic competition is actually between you and your own imagination. Because what your kids imagine, they can now act on farther, faster, and cheaper than ever before as individuals. So that everything's becoming a commodity except imagination, the ability to spark new ideas. And I think that's extraordinarily powerful for this audience, which you're already thinking about. So, you know, ahead of the curve. But, you know, I think we talked about this yesterday about the rate of change of everything in this world, and that you have to be just designing models and businesses that are able to adapt to the current rate of change, which is really becomes sort of the new reality. So, and every industry is having this problem, from swimsuit industries to private equity to whatever it is. So I think it's important to think about that. So the challenge that I wanted to share to you all is to, you know, think about what are you creating of your own digital presence that is motivating you and empowering you to connect with fans and to really give a long tail effect to one-off events. And how are you creating this ongoing dialogue throughout your career, throughout whatever? And so I think that's sort of the question. You know, what can your digital toolkit look like? I always think about it as a toolkit, because I think if, you know, if you have a smartphone, if you have a flip camera, if you have a Facebook fan page, if you have a YouTube channel and take a little time to set it up and have the same background images for it that matches your website or whatever you do, and have all this thing together, Twitter account, and laying out a plan for something doable that you're going to stick to. You don't have to commit to writing every day. Pick something that's like a doable plan for you. And think about having at least a mobile web app so that's a good browsing experience for any smartphone. And then think about audience building activities for yourself. So this is just a post, you know, sort of things what you can do that, you know, and of course a blog is to be in there, obviously. I kind of go in tandem with that in the mobile website. But thinking about some of this concept, I think, is important. I know everyone knows this, but I think it's important to think that the internet's not going away, so you've got to think about how this is being integrated into your strategy as a whole. And you know, when you look at a lot of organizations that are still like, they have no problem spending $150,000 on print material, but they don't want to spend, you know, $1,200 on having a mobile web app, and you're like, guys, can we look at the open rate for your snail mail material and, you know, things like flash screens on websites that have a drop-off rate, which I forget what that is, 60-70% drop-off rate. You have a pretty looking splash screen rate, but not many people look through it. Things like that. New media can create jobs for you, and that is, well, I'm certainly a customer to that, but there are so many opportunities that I think are important. I think it's very important to recognize there's no magic bullet. You need to try things and see what works. You need to see what works for your clientele group. You need to adjust, you know, there's no hard and fast rules. And it's not just a one-off event. I think that is also extraordinarily important to think about. So how do you create your own story? I would encourage that you find your voice that you have throughout your toolkit, your online presence as a whole, and figure out what your personal story is. And it has to be honest, it has to be you, and it has to be something that you feel proud of sharing and being true to your artistic integrity. Create an integrated digital strategy. I'd be happy to share many things about what's working, what people are doing. You know, anything from like, you know, I wish somebody, I keep trying to get Fema Bronfman, who's just a riot, who has, he's hysterical when he talks about his like daily hotel experiences. And he has like, it's just like makes you cry with laughter. But he's not so great with this guy. We tried to actually get him to just do little flip camera things that he would upload and hasn't been so successful. But I keep waiting. There's so many fun things that something human that, I mean, that's true to him, like a part of his humor, so it would be wonderful. But anyway, I also think that people forget about when they think like, oh, digital strategy or some plan. They forget that they're already doing things that are fascinating to many people and that they can take what they're already doing and transfer that and share that with their community and making everyone in the community part of the process. I don't know if any of you young people out there are aware of this. I wonder if anyone knows who this band or group is. So they were anything, this is pretty really fun. They incorporated early on and established a board of directors with a rotating CEO position consisting of the band, road crew, and other members of the band. They founded a profitable merchandising division. They famously permitted fans to tape their shows, seeding a major revenue source and potential record sales. And it reflected in a shrewd assessment that sharing a wider audience, a ban would be unenforceable, and anyone inclined to tape the show would probably spend money elsewhere. They became one of the most profitable bands. So any young people, who is that?
Am I young?
You are in the huh? Yes, thank you. The Grateful Dead. Actually, the legendary, my partner, legendary tech entrepreneur, left, he was at MIT at 14. He left school for a bit to urban music. So he was the first guy to build the soundboard for the Grateful Dead, where people could come in and plug in their tape recorder to record the shows. So I just think that's a very important case study to think about in terms of disseminating information. So just quickly, just kidding, I wanted to share a little bit about what's happening for YouTube Symphony Orchestra. It's happening March 14th through 21st in Sydney. And it's kind of, it's taking the first version on the Internet Academy Hall, and this is like kind of on steroids, if you will. So the event itself is going to be broadcast and all of that on all the platforms. But something that's been really, really cool is, and does everyone know sort of what the YouTube Symphony Orchestra thing is? Is there how it has worked? I don't know if I should share a little teeny bit. Well, so people were able to audition for their various work, their various musical instruments. There was an improv component this time. There were people from 70 different countries and territories uploaded their audition content, and then people from there were 97 members chosen, and they are flying to Sydney to rehearse. And this is going to be what I've been involved in, which is really I'm really excited about. Is that so? All the members have been awarded their own website, their own mobile app, their own Android app for our system, and they are. They don't know this. Don't please keep this quiet. They will be receiving soon now, but they'll be receiving phones, so that they'll have very easy access to be able to upload video content directly to their YouTube channel throughout the whole experience. And they please don't share that. Are going to then, one of the things I think is really cool is that the live event itself will actually be streamed on all of their own websites and their own mobile apps, as well as YouTube. Now, the reason I think that's so important is that these guys, to the point about being motivated and empowered to generate content and build fans, they can have their local heroes in some of their areas, and so their fan community can go to their website to watch their performance in Sydney. It's not just going to the YouTube channel page that doesn't do anything for closing the loop and re-engaging the fan community. So I think that's fantastic. I'm extremely excited about it. Thus far, we built a custom app for Google for this project, and there's been over 130,000 downloads of the Android app. And Taylor Swift and Linkin Park are the two closest competitors, and they've had, there are about 50,000-60,000 downloads of Android, which I thought was really, really exciting. It has live Twitter feeds and all that kind of stuff pulling in. Back to the visual. I've worked very closely with Telstra, which is a telecom company in Australia. They have Wi-Fi the entire precinct around Sydney Opera House, and the inside of the Sydney Opera House event is going to be projected on HD screens, so to speak, on the sails of the Sydney Harbour, into the harbour. And what will happen is everyone will be able to receive headphones when they come into the harbour, for those people that are not in the city's Sydney Hall. That will be able to listen to the music on their in tandem with watching it inside through the apps, through the YouTube Symphony Orchestra apps or any of the artist apps. But they'll be able to watch an installation or a thing up on the in tandem with the inside event. So it's really literally taking a concert experience and turning it inside out and sharing it on mobile web through hundreds of different websites and apps. So it's really cool. So, and you can download it, and if you download the YouTube Symphony Orchestra app, now you can get a push notification if you want when it's about to go streaming. You can check stuff out on the screen and all that. I just wanted to share, these are just kind of a couple of quick things that these are YouTube Symphony winners who have built their own websites and handily given the tools. And I just want to direct quickly to the upper right there, which has a little emblem that is Hyundai. Now, Hyundai is the global sponsor for this. When I packaged this as part of the sponsorship model, it was the fact that not only on YouTube Symphony Orchestra's app, but also on every winner's apps, their Android app, their mobile web app, their web builder, their website, that it is branding, that is Hyundai, it is a click-through spot, it's brand sponsorship on 120 different websites, 120 Android apps, 120 different web apps. This was part of the whole thing. There's also going to be live video streaming credit to Telstra as a global sponsor, for powering the Wi-Fi and streaming capabilities for all of this. So I think it's very, very important to think about. It's not just, you know, the name and a program. People think, oh, nobody's interested in you know, technology sponsorship. Like, this is, you know, put that on the back of your digital download card, put that for Take the Concert Home, their logo, put an embed streaming announcement with the sponsor name, put it on the click-through spot on the website. You start to build, and I've now sold a number of these large projects for huge organizations, and they are massive sponsorships, and people are extremely excited. In fact, when another telecom company heard about this, they actually approached us to say, hey, we want to do this kind of thing with sponsorship and power custom app for an orchestra in our area. So I just want to really, I can't hit that point home enough. I'm just going to move through this stuff. Yeah, this is just an example of his music. Again, there's the sponsorship stuff, the shape on each page of his website for the design he chose, and full album details and his music player and so forth and so on. There's another guy, so it's kind of fun. There's a sponsorship logo there. Anyways, there's a bunch of all the way past this stuff. Now, and if anyone, what will happen is automatically on their homepage of all their sites, will automatically say live video streaming about to start. People can just go and touch that from their phone, his mobile app, or from his phone, or from the website to stream it and so forth. So, kind of fun, but it'll be really neat to see how that happens. And again, it's not costing any more money for it to go to all these different websites and things. So, imagine if you could do that for an Arts Enterprise chapter or something of that sort. Here's where the percussion is. So what happened is once YouTube entered Sydney Opera House entered their event listing, it was automatically a featured event and all of their websites, get ticket information, all that kind of stuff. And so kind of exciting. So that's that one kind of grand scale example. Article Lawn was started in San Diego by two amazing young Demarion Gill, who's a flute player. Principal flute player at San Diego Symphony. It was a career section known from Charles as a kid. And Kate Happy, her wonderful violinist. And they were, I don't think they mind saying, they were frustrated with their job satisfaction and just playing the orchestra. Both very, very creative. So they started this series, it started really small. They went to the art museum and they said, would you be willing to allow us to use the space for a space in the gallery and create a 1 hour program that centered around one painting in the gallery. They built a program around it. Then they went to the restaurant across the street from the museum and said, you stay open late, you get the audience here to stay, and whatever. Well, that was, it was, they're now in the third season. It's expanded to six. They're always sold out. They've had to move to a larger venue for this one area for some of their concerts. And it's just, it's incredible. They sent out this in their newsletter from the other day. They have done the Take the Concert Home event. That's what they started with. They got really, in the beginning, it was like dismal recording quality, but it was like, it was the thought that counted, I think, more initially. And they brought it. Now they have a fabulous engineer, but they basically allow the audience to take the concert home for free, and they invited them when they went online to make a voluntary donation when they were downloading the concert. And they raised almost $4,000 in small donations from that voluntarily giving the, you know, giving the opportunity to take a concert home. And the audience, the hall only, the gallery only seats about 110 people. So I think that's, it's been a fabulous return, and as an example, I would, if any of you are ever interested in connecting with them and finding out what they've done, they're now a Qualcomm hall, it's expanding their commissioning, and they can pay. They started out small, again, you know, but it was started small. It was economically doable, and all this volunteered initially to, you know, play for very little money. But now it's grown. It's an amazing organization, and they're amazing people. And I would encourage any of you if you're interested in learning about what they did, just to bug me. I can they'd be honored to share. The other one, I'm sure Rachel knows, I think Far Cry is an amazing organization as well, started by actually one of my former students, that are a core group of them, 17 of them, basically incorporated as a nonprofit. And they have a complete sort of rev sharing model. They give per diem to each other. It started out small as well, and now they're managed by Opus 3 artists. They have significant revenue and concerts coming in. And this is just one thing that I thought was funny. A fun project that they're doing, sort of a young artist competition in tandem with NEC Prep, which is great, which is also a win-win. Somebody was talking about this yesterday, of an opportunity to get parents to come to concerts and get hooked and all of this stuff. And what a better way than to do this through a competition and get the whole community involved and so forth. And so anyways, I thought that was is great. I asked them if they would mind me sharing this with you all, and they're very enthusiastic. They're also be honored to speak with any of you. This is sort of their just like rudimentary four season growth and what they're doing, which I think is fabulous. I can speak more about that in any way. This is their global organizational structure chart, which is, I think, very, very, very critical. And I wish Berkshire as a whole were able to look at this model more, where it's really run by the musicians. So except for the stuff on the left, they outsource those components. Or have outside individuals, but except for the board chair and the outside directors, it's entirely made up of their team. So they're all stakeholders in that you know their entity, which I think is fantastic. So anyways, kudos to them. Nina Turlov, actually Google has hired her to be the liaison for all the artist websites that you see. She's like the Uber proselyte, we're fantastic creative innovator, I've learned just that Peter and Mark, I guess, know her from school back in the day. She's a whirlwind. She has her own Google advert. She has integrated everything from PayPal accounts to ad space to whatever. She does Skype video recording. She does Skype rehearsing. She just uploaded this new Fandango contraption so that the YouTube Symphony players actually were rehearsing together online ahead of Sydney. And anyway, so very, very innovative things. She makes house calls. You can click and order through PayPal your online lessons. And she is quite successful in this area. So I thought this was an amazing model of new ways that you can if you want to charge for online lessons, virtual lessons, if you're after a music hall, it's an amazing technology. It's private, so you don't have to have it all out there and it's real time and all that. So that's that. We created a little code for Arts Enterprise students to have a discount if they want to try out any of our web builder stuff, which I just wanted to share. But I think back to Nina's thing, there's also, she does a lot of, somebody was mentioning yesterday about Guitar Hero and the video stuff. You know, there's a lot of these guys that are, there's a video, I can send the link around if anyone's interested, but this violinist who teaches other people how to play Super Mario Brothers on the violin. It has over 2 million hits. So, you know, things like thinking outside the box, you know, it sounds really tough to say, but I think that there's a lot of these kind of, if there's something that you think is cool that you're excited about, that, you know, what makes you unique, you know, chances are somebody else will probably find you very unique as well. So, and how you integrate that. So that's sort of, sorry to if I went ramble too much, but that's kind of a quick overview of things. Do we have any time for comments, questions, thoughts, anything?
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm just, it's amazing. I mean, once you sort of release the challenge of using the tools, I guess it's who's helping. I mean, Nina sort of came up with this, probably.
Yeah.
And I don't know who's helping other people sort of even think through what they already do and how could be manifested in this new kind of community.
I wish that there was much more of that. I mean, we're like, my company is a team of five people. It's engineers and myself, and basically all I do is like kind of go around and help try to create a strategy, like very specific strategies for places. But the industry is in desperate need of, you know, sort of, it's a new sort of, it's not just marketing, it's not just communications, it's not just fundraising, you know, it's somebody who's really looking at a complete integrated approach, and there's a desperate need.
Well, what if, people would pay an hourly to get a coach, or a counselor, or like a therapist almost?
I think that's what we need. You need like a simple, I think any of the people here could.
Well, you could do it through your place. So it's $50 an hour, and you can talk to somebody, and they can help you figure out what you do that's already ready. And
Exactly. I am constantly reminded that I'm not supposed to, because we have to scale, and we're the platform.
No,
you can't. No, right, but this is exactly, and in fact, we have a professional services page where I've been trying to start building exactly that. Like, have someone to do your digital strategy for you, have someone, you know, just pay them. I think if anyone wants to do that, I would be happy to promote it. I think there's incredible new markets emerging for these kinds of jobs, and there's such a need for it. I could go on and on. I mentioned to a reporter yesterday that I had gone in and was so excited that I had gotten this sponsor to pay for this massively custom mobile app for this major organization. And the director of marketing at the luncheon that was being held, where the major sponsor was telling them they were buying them this custom app, the marketing director said, "Well, we may have to do some data entry for this mobile app, and we're not sure that we really want to invest that time." Now, this was from their sponsor, who gives them $3 million annually and was spending additional money to have a co-branded app for them, and the marketing director said that, which was really fabulous. So we need to change that.
can you talk about, what are the barriers to this stuff taking over, with musicians? If you're talking to conservatories that are training the next generation, you yourself have gone through that very traditional training and yet sort of seen the light of this world, and yet there's so much resistance to it. Where is there resistance to it?
What do you think of the problems? I don't know. I would love to. I can't get a conservatory other than Curtis to integrate understanding that you should have, if you have a class, if you have part of your freshman. I think as freshmen, it should be like your book fee. You are required to start building your digital presence. You can make it for, $50 or whatever. You can be very, very, very low that each school, or each arts enterprise student should. It should just be part of what happens. Like, it's a responsibility that's part of that. I think that's one thing that needs to happen. I think the problem with, the musicians are sadly, I feel like, my friend, is like the last crew to be changed. I think that the arts organizations as a whole have just been, they're being forced to confront that at this time. I feel like everyone's in various stages of grief. And the first thing I do when I go in, I'm sure, you see denial, you see anger, you see whatever, and I always assess in every meeting I have, it's like, where are they in their grief process? start to think about it, actually, when you go into the night, it's very interesting. So you can see, okay, they're here, now how do I get them to here? Or how can you alleviate some of the fear, the control fear, the fact that it's out of their comfort zone, this seems very scary. And not everyone's going to be an early actor to it, but how do you help them through this process, make it less scary? But I think the teachers, it's a journey. You have to start small. I think you have to start with something. I always say to orchestras, if they ever want to do a screening event or something like a download code just for trial purposes, as a fundraising, non-commercial initiative, don't try to do it 6 months from then. Do it in like 3 weeks, which sounds like disastrously complex. But if you have too much time to like, starting, it's like a nightmare. So just like get started, start something small, do it well, see how it works, earn some trust, and alleviate some fear and get going. And Curtis is really, it's a very conservative environment, and they've become like the biggest, their faculty is supportive now. I mean, it's just been amazing. And it actually helped Chambers Society, Chambers in Northwest, and La Jolla, and all these other things. The faculty now are used to it. They know what streaming means now. They know what non-commercial use means, And they want it on their website. They don't have content to pull up here. So, yeah.
There is another conservatory that's willing to pile on. And I say this to the students here at UMKC and to the Arts Enterprise chapter here, we're ready to go on helping our students do this. And what we need are early adopters. We need, the Office of the Dean seeks students to come forward and say, learn on my back and we'll do this together. We're ready to go.
Data, like who came to the website, who downloaded, like, demographic data?
Yes, it's all in real time. That's a great question. Yes, all, and we also tell them how to, we suggest getting Google Analytics, and here's where you go to do this, you have the walkthroughs of that stuff. We give them directions to go to GoDaddy or wherever.com to get their URL if they want to make them for free. We try to, yes, but if you receive a donation, it sends an auto email saying, you know, here's the person's address, the, you know, whatever, all that information, here's the amount. It shows in real time the complete streams, the partial streams at the track level. It shows the, you know, how many fans, whatever, it shows all the information. Yeah,
sounds good. Yes? First, thank you guys for sharing. This is my brain is a watch. Oh, sorry.
Very little money, just the data entry side for metro areas. have a sponsor, whether it's, whoever, featured on an integrated, that they create a parks organization app, listing app, event listing app, for a metro area, and have their branding integrated on every page of apps for that we build for event listings or for music. There's space and or video. There's space to feature either a click-through button or targeted brought to you by whatever. Aspen does it for personal people. They say, thanks to the Bass family for the sponsoring this concert. They don't have to click through. But that's an example. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, just an observation. 2 points. Benny Lee is here, and he is one of Kansas City's great entrepreneurs and is a supporter of the entrepreneurship program here at the Block School. And he's the person who asked the question. And one of the things that I'm able to connect is that the Harriman Jewel series, one of the august chamber music series in the country, and also a home here at Kansas City, is indeed power, its backbone for its site, is an instant encore site.
Yeah, I forgot.
Are closer together than we might think about this thing. Harriman Jewel is actually driven by instant encore.
Yeah, and this is actually, they've done one of the most creative jobs with this, because this is a very, not expensive thing that they've used this technology to make it. They, had some graphic design work to create a skin, but this is incredibly well. They did this themselves they had just the banner artwork done, but their marketing part, they did not use the web developer or graphic designer for building their own stuff in here. This is something their own team did, which is fabulous. You don't have to spend $10,000 this is costing them less than $1,000. So, which in it has their ticket. I mean, it's actually really beautifully done. What they did. So, thank you.
I forgot about
that.
It's being done.
It is being done.
Here.
I think we're going to have to wrap it up here, but could we all give Margot